Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
And good morning and welcome to the Brown Briefly podcast and weekly radio show here on the Voice of Vachon, located on beautiful Vachon Island. We're rising above the waters of Puget Sound between Seattle and Tacoma in the beautiful state of Washington. That was the voice of Brian Brown, who is the creator of the Brown Briefly. Brian started the Briefly and brought his high standards of intelligent discussion, which we attempt to emulate. And it's about current affairs laced with humor and empathy. Brian's motto is, of course, less is more, more or less. Always loved that. And he always offered us a heck of a lot more over time, that's for sure. So, the Briefly panel this morning, we've got the whole crew actually in the studio this morning. How fun is that? Yeah.
What happened?
We have our legal beagle, our consensus builder, former Washington State Assistant Attorney General and Fulbright Scholar, Mr. Craig Bellis.
Hello, and good morning, everyone.
Is that Craig Bellis Esquire? Isn't that what they use for?
They do. I always think of myself helping somebody up on a horse when I hear that.
It's not Squire. It's Esquire.
It's close.
Okay, the defender of justice, mariner, cyclist, top secret engineer, Mr. Kevin Jones.
I am with y'all today enjoying the view from the Gene Bosch downtown studio.
This is great. I love having the whole crew here at one time. This is fabulous. Historian, professor. Now, this party animal is the one that got crept in here. I'm not sure about that, but down under aficionado, historian, Dr. Bruce Hallman.
Hey, great to be here.
I love it. And, our fairy maven, part-time Politico. The only reason I'm laughing is a full-time shenanigans coordinator. I love that. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning. I'm moving into full-time on all of those head into session.
Oh, boy, no kidding. Oh, that's right. Oh, well, we'll need to cover a little of that.
Yeah, we've got, political intrigue here in the 34th. My phone is jumping these days.
All right.
Yeah. A bit.
All right, so hey, speaking of jumping, before we jump in, let's go around the table and see what everybody's been up to. Hey, Craig, how about you?
I had a great New Year's Eve and New Year's. I perhaps partied a little too hard. I'm paying the wages for the wages sin. Of sin. I caught some kind of cold thing, but I went to Bowie Rex at the O Space on New Year's Eve. And I think the Benadryl or whatever I was taking at the time thoroughly dehydrated me, and I almost keeled over.
Really?
Which would have been a scene.
Yeah.
And not a good one.
So, party animal.
I was going to say.
Everyone knows hydration is key, man. It's a rookie mistake.
And alcohol doesn't count as hydration.
No.
Only beer, like light beer.
Okay,
yeah.
Good.
All right, all right. And then the next morning, at 10 o'clock, I went to a New Year's Day pajama party.
Oh, my gosh.
Pajama brunch that went on from 10 till 4 or something.
Oh, my gosh.
And that was great fun, everybody in their cats and jammers. So that's what I was up to.
Oh, that's fantastic. Good Lord. So how about you, Kevin?
You know, it seems like forever since we've been on the Briefly. There's a whole new year now.
It is.
Yeah. I was thinking back to when we were last here. I've my Logs to Lumber program is nearing completion, so I need to go weigh the product to see how many pounds or tons of carbon I've stored as sequestered. But the shop is full of wood, and I might need to build another building.
Oh, all right.
But at least have the lumber now to do it, right?
There you go. Cool. Just don't build it out of green lumber.
This is on the 3-year.
There you go.
Program.
There you go.
Yeah. We did, speaking of session, we had our Environment Climate Bill Tracker kickoff meeting just yesterday with the folks with the Indivisible Vachon Network who are going to focus on environment and climate. So it looked like we're only going to have a couple of folks, and then, amazingly, like 3 or 4 more came in.
All right.
So, yeah, we're going to have a very robust team this year. But the other highlight so far of the week was this morning. It wasn't clear. The coach is back for the Vashon Island Rowing Club, and it was like on the water at 8 and glass smooth water in January. First time in a double. So it will be a memorable experience. It was quite pleasurable to be out there making the water move around. So
cool.
Good morning today.
That's excellent. Mm-hmm. I'm envious and not envious. If you want to know how to, you know, I think that's wonderful that you can do it, but boy, ain't no way in heck I'm going to be doing that.
Well, so. You know, some people have told me that there's different definitions of fun.
And, yeah, there you go. Yeah, that's yeah. it. How about you, Bruce?
Oh, quiet New Year's Eve. We had the grandkids, our 7-year-old and 11-year-old, for the first time, stayed up till midnight, which was big excitement for them.
Yeah,
and of course at KVI Beach where we live, normally there's lots of fireworks. This year, hardly any.
Really?
But we get to see all the fireworks at Burien, at Des Moines, and Federal Way. So we were looking across the Sound at the fireworks displays, which are beautiful because you can't hear them.
Yeah, exactly. That's fabulous.
And then, of course, New Year's Day. Traditionally, in the past, there's been this huge group of people that come and plunge,
sure.
polar bear plunge at noon at KVI Beach. Well, this year it was very disorganized. There were three different, some came at 11, some came at 12, some came at 1. They were all sort of small groups. So the Ellisport neighbors are thinking, we need to get organized and get this back to being a major event at KVI Beach. And then on a personal level, today is a significant day. It's my second retirement. I'm no longer president of the Vashon Heritage Museum.
Oh,
so
man.
I'm going into my new second phase retirement and having to figure out what I'm going to do with my life.
Oh, boy. Don't be putting that out there. You know,
please. No.
Yeah. You know, there.
You do. Greg is already on me.
I am.
But you did a...
Yeoman's
memorable job at the museum. I congratulate you on the work you've done.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, thank
Absolutely.
You.
Well, that's where thank I think you. The party animal moniker came. Some of those events at the O Space.
Here it is.
That's right.
All right, Amy, how about you? You're back.
I'm back. And, you know, I feel like I got shot out of a cannon a little bit. You know, I go to Denver and everything's so quiet and peaceful. I don't have anything to report to the Brown briefly. Yeah. In bed by 10:30 on New Year's Eve, you know. Well,
great.
we did on New Year's Day have our traditional, Aaron and I had our traditional cheese and champagne brunch while watching the Rose Parade, which is one of my favorite traditions ever. It might be one of my favorite events of the year.
Oh.
If not, I just, you know, I tear up. I just love
really?
Watching those floats. I mean, the flowers. And well, I was a kid in SoCal and I went to school in SoCal. And, you know, at one point I went with my grandma and we helped put flowers on the floats.
Oh, cool.
You know, so a little bit deeply entrenched in the tradition. But I flew in yesterday. SeaTac Airport, I think, is looking good. I'm telling you, the Denver versus SeaTac. I go to the two most exciting airports in the nation.
Yeah.
Denver, man, they process you through. It's like customs in Germany. I mean, they are just snap. Renovated it. But anyway. Yeah, then I had the, you know, VIFR commissioner meeting last night, which is, you know, it's a great time of transition and opportunity. And then talking with some of our legislators this morning about the boats. So, whew.
Man, you came back with your hair on fire.
It's ironic. I go over to the, you know, I go over to the mainland in the big city to relax. And I come back here here to be a party animal.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. You know, the whole thing at Denver there with those all the multiple terminals and the train, it's really pretty well organized. I was pretty impressed with it.
It was a really efficient airport. You know, I've now been there for over the last 20 years, and they started this renovation, and I know they've got a vision, but it's just hard to see it as a passenger right now, because it really did run pretty well. But I think that just capacity has overwhelmed them, and they still don't have the train capacity to handle the security passengers that they're moving through. And so,
Leon Panetta, when he's the guy who came up with that, was head of the transportation department at that time when they put it way the heck out of town. Everybody was complaining about it.
Put it in Nebraska.
Yeah, just about. Well, yeah, Bruce.
question about the mullet. Is that new?
Oh yeah, no.
Is that Denver? Oh, come on now.
You know, it's I've been cultivating it for a while, and I, you know, there's this gal that I go to in Denver at the Floyd Supercuts, which you know I really like. I love a discount haircut, and
so
you know, she really nailed it. So I'm fresh off. I'm fresh off the cut right now. Thank you. Yeah.
I was wondering. I noticed a little difference there. I was just
you got
trying
the business
to get
up front there.
Right? Oh, it's business, and the party in the back is really going. She let it, asked her to let it go a little bit longer back there, and it's really coming in nicely.
All right.
So people will need to now cross paths with you on Vashon just to see what we're
just
talking
to see
about.
What we're
just
talking
to,
about.
To check out it's a fullet, as I call it, because it's like a faux hawk mullet. Yeah.
So if we see people like lining up on the sidewalk outside,
we're going to know.
Yeah. Stand and wave at the four way.
Well, my week was pretty laid back. The sofa was pretty darn comfortable watching TV on New Year's Eve. Did not even hear the fireworks going off. I couldn't believe it. And I don't know if it's because there weren't very many. Somebody did open up with an automatic at one point, you know, a semi-automatic. That one kind of got my attention. I thought it was back in Vietnam, you know. But otherwise, no, not a lot. But, you know, I will have to say, Bruce, that you're talking about watching the fireworks without the sound. Mm-hmm. I flew from San Francisco to San Jose. You know how far that is. We just had a reposition flight where we had to have the airplane the next morning to come out of San Jose. And so we took off to the east, I guess, and then made a big circle all the way around the bay and then landed back to the north at San Jose. So here, all these fireworks, this is 4th of July. So all the fireworks in the bay were going off. It was pretty cool. Nice. I have to admit it's not quite as impressive when you're looking down on it, but it was still pretty cool.
You don't
cool.
want to be in the midst of it, is the only thing.
No, that's true.
Yeah,
that's
true. What's the elevation of those things?
Yeah, they don't go that high. No, but we didn't either. I mean, we probably didn't get over, you know, 2,500 feet or so. It was pretty
short hop.
Yeah, it was pretty short. Okay, so, hey, of course, I looked into Today in History, which we always love to do. This first one fascinated me, and I know that the sailors and the pilot will enjoy this, but in 1904, the Marconi Company established its CDQ as the first international radio distress signal. And for those, if you are a ham radio operator, you know that CQ is what's used when you're calling anyone. You go, you know, it's da-da-da-da-da-da-da. It's CQ, 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 and then you put your call sign. And somebody else will respond in Morse code. Well, what's interesting about that is they came up with CQD, so CQ distress, which, you know, I think is pretty interesting. Okay. But in just a couple of years later, the next year, 1905, the worldwide standard was agreed upon in the International Radio Telegraph Convention, and they came up with SOS. And initially, SOS, well, in fact, it is, if you're sending a Morse code, SOS is what they call a prosign. It's you send it before your signal. And so you're sending SOS, and then you send your signal, and that lets people know that. And it wasn't until much later that, and this is a new word for me, a backronym. Have you ever heard that? Backronym? A backronym is where you take the initials and then make a word to go with the initials.
Yeah.
And that's like save our souls or save our ship. But now everyone recognizes SOS as an international distress. But anyway, I thought that was kind of interesting.
And I'm just, you know, they have so many letters to choose from.
Well, three dots, three dashes, you know. Mm-hmm. It's did-did-did, da-da-da, did-did-did. That's SOS.
Well, and it's interesting, too, because the Coast Guard and the Canadian Coast Guard use pon-pon, which is, you know, not an emergency, but an announcement kind of thing. And so you're sort of
Do airplanes.
Goodness, airplanes must have learned something from the sailors.
Yeah. Well, we use Mayday.
And Mayday as well.
You know? Exactly. Sure. And I've used that a few times.
Treetop flyer.
Yeah. Starboard, all that kind of stuff, right?
Well, actually, you know what? Here's a short story for you. There was at Horizon Airlines, when I used to fly for those guys, we had a captain and first officer took off from Pasco. And they had an engine problem, so they shut the engine down, and they're going to go back to Pasco. And they told the air traffic control, hey, you know, we have to return to Pasco. And the air traffic control says, or do you want to declare an emergency? Well, the first officer is the guy who's on the radio. Oh, he's been in Alaska flying in the bush. And he goes, no, we're doing fine. And the captain goes, what? You get on there and declare an emergency right now and have that equipment standing by right now. He goes, oh, God, I thought you were doing great.
Who knows what's yet to come, right?
Exactly.
Well, hey, speaking of this SOS thing, Susie purchased for me over Christmas holiday a new headlamp.
Oh.
And it's great. It's rechargeable batteries and all that stuff, you know. So I'm playing around with it, and these things, of course, nowadays have like, you know, a jillion different modes. And so I'm noticing one of the flashing light, you know, modes. So, oh, get people's attention. Oh, and by the way, it's the SOS.
SOS?
Yeah. So, you know, and now I'm glad I know that, because I might just be using it, you know, to like, hey, you know, pay attention to what's going on. But no, they're saying, oh, that guy needs some help.
Yeah. That's interesting. I know. I bought two of those headlamps myself. This is the one that has the bar across the top, you know, with the LED.
Right. Yeah.
Man, that thing is great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Highly recommend it. So we should get them as a sponsor.
Absolutely. I think we can wear them all here in the studio.
Of course, you do blind people with those.
Each other.
Yeah. They're pretty bright. Okay. So now this one I really find interesting. 1931, Guy Menzies flies solo, first time solo, nonstop, Trans-Tasmania flight from Australia to New Zealand, 11 hours and 45 minutes. And I don't know what kind of airplane it was, but
where did he leave Australia from?
I don't know.
Was it just a bunch of birds? Taped together birds?
Isn't that something?
They had to wind up the rubber band.
Keep the darn thing wound up.
11 hours
and 45 minutes.
Didn't have a restroom on board.
Yeah, I know. Probably had a range extender, though. That's another little piece of equipment that we carry on the airplane.
Okay, tell me more.
Yeah.
Please don't.
You can use your imagination.
Imagination.
All right. Now, this one I really find fascinating. 1936, tennis champs Helen Moody and Howard Kinsley had a volley that was 2,001 times.
Oh, my.
It took an hour and 18 minutes to do that. Can you imagine?
I'm exhausted.
Thinking about it.
And so were they must have been like working on the Guinness World Book of Records.
I don't know.
Yeah, I can't imagine that was in competition. That was an effort to just maintain a volley for that long.
That must have been. Yeah. I mean, you hardly ever see one go more than five or six or seven or whatever at the most.
Right, yeah, exactly.
But 2,001 times. Can you imagine? Whether you had to have been dragging after that one.
Oh, was that clay court grass?
I don't know. We should look it up.
Were they still standing or did they?
Yeah, they were probably going to be like one of those dance contests, you know, where they're holding each other up.
Yeah, right.
In 1962, the reason I find this one interesting, 1962, there was an assassination attempt on President Sukarno from Indonesia. And the reason I find that interesting, as soon as I read that, I flash back to the movie, a 1985 movie of The Year of Living Dangerously. Have you folks seen that? Anybody seen that movie?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I see a few nods. That is a great movie. It was one all right, help me out here. Sigourney Weaver and Mel Gibson. It was one of his first movies.
Well, that sounds great already.
Oh, it was really quite good. And what's really interesting is Linda Hunt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the little woman, the little tiny woman, she played a guy. And I didn't know that she was a she. And at the end of the movie, they announce, you know, who it is. And my jaw about hit the floor. And my wife, of course, laughing because she knew. But she was great. She was great. Just a really fun movie. Okay, so, hey, let's move into our briefly talk, as we call it. By the way, today is the what we're euphemistically calling the Truman Show, because we don't have a guest, and so you guys leave it up to me to come up with something, which is always interesting, my part. The couple of things that I've got, of course, is Senator Joe Nguyen is moving to the Department of Commerce, and so Kevin, this is really toward you. How do they select someone to succeed him?
Well, I'm not sure that I'm to be quoted on this, but I understand the 34th Dems have that responsibility. Is that right?
They make a recommendation to the Seattle City Council. Yes, and I understand that that has been rebuffed before. No slam dunks. I mean, I think it is pretty much. It would be extraordinary if Representative Alvarado were not appointed to the Senate seat. Mm-hmm. That would be extraordinary. So I think we're obviously following this very closely as we get ready to go into session, because basically what this means for us going into a really difficult fight around the boats and funding and the transportation budget is that the 34th is not down a representative, but we'll have our backup quarterback in the game. And Representative Alvarado was a great champion. Senator Wynn was very influential. Of course, Joe Fitzgibbon remains very influential for us, but we've been watching this very closely, and West Seattle Blog had a great article about all the folks who filed for the Senate seat, which is really I'm calling it the preseason for the House appointment. That's what we're going to be looking at.
Any insights from your discussions with legislators this morning that you can share with us?
Well, actually this morning we talked with Representative Alvarado's office last week, and they just kind of said, hey, so glad to hear from you. We understand your priorities. We have a lot going on right now. We did speak with Representative Nance today, this morning, though, over in Kitsap, and he is very much, kind of reaffirmed his commitment to being in coalition with Vashon and very much carrying the ball for us when it comes to ferries, even extending into the water taxi. So he's going to be coming out with, we kind of said, is it all right to start socializing the Mosquito Fleet Act, as it were? And he said, yep, we can start talking about that. He's getting a shape to it for a block grant program to expand passenger service throughout the Sound. That's great news for us. His commitment to us is, we believe, very genuine and really, really critical. Whoever joins our delegation will be, part of our delegation. But as you look at the candidates kind of circling back, there are not many who have had extensive engagement with the Vashon community. Right. There is one from Vashon, Ben Carr, who was on the community council. And of course, we would love to have a hometown hero. But there are also some school board folks in there Highline, Burien City Council member in there, someone on the King County Conservation Commission. I'm trying not to just read here from the internet. And Brianna Thomas, we're super curious about. She works with the West Seattle Mayor's Office. And then there is also a West Seattle software engineer. So it's a full field. Unclear who will file for what likely will be the House appointment. But of course, session starts next week. We may start without a full boat on the 34th.
Just a quick question. What are the boundaries of the 34th? I mean, 34th, up to about 10 years ago, used to link Vashon with Federal Way and Auburn and those kind of things. And so we were always blown away by Republican candidates. They shifted the boundaries. And so maybe you can give our listeners a sense of what we're talking about here for the 34th.
Yeah, without an exact map in my head, it basically goes from Burien east, kind of, encompasses Burien and then kind of hits a straight line north up, sort of encompassing Seattle, West Seattle, until you get to, I think it's Pier 51 is a cutoff almost, or maybe it's Washington State Ferries Pier, but it cuts off halfway north there. But yeah, they have pulled it much further west for us. So the eastern boundary really, I think, stops around Burien and then heads north from there.
And there was an adjustment in the Burien area. I think they moved that line north of I'm not sure how much, but that was a issue of conversation, right, about how much of Burien was still going to be associated with
the whole Federal Way area and all of that. That's completely, those folks have completely different issues than we do, I would think.
Now, as far as filling appointments to seats, what I have heard, and Amy, you may have heard the same or different, that there's like three names that are submitted forward for consideration. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I had also heard that Representative Alvarado was a consideration based on folks that were involved with the 34th Dems. But, of course, the process needs to play out. Is that all ringing true with what you've heard?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I would just assume, you know, given her very strong advocacy and effectiveness, mm-hmm. that, you know, can't imagine that she isn't an incredibly strong candidate. Nothing, of course, is a given, but I would be very surprised.
No, really stupid question. Is this an appointment at this point, then? And who makes the appointment?
Who makes the appointment?
My understanding is the King County Council is, submit, and then King County Council.
I've heard as well. Thanks for that reminder. Yeah, now, there have been changes in the past when, for example, when Senator Wynn was named as the chair of the Environment Committee in the Senate, and Representative Fitzgibbon was chair of the Environment Committee in the House.
Right.
And I was thinking, oh boy, here we go, got both 34th Dems, people representing that actual, mm-hmm. issue. Mm-hmm. And I was told, nope, that's not going to happen. But you're going to be happy with where Representative Fitzgibbon goes. And he is now, I think, majority leader in the House.
Yeah.
So he won't be the kind of person who's going to have his names on a lot of bills these days, right? Because he's sort of managing at a higher level, at least is my understanding. And so, of course, I think he's going to stay where he is my expectation, and let others sort of jump into this, see who gets appointed.
Well, yeah. with his new position in the Department of Commerce, is he going to have some effect on the ferries, I would assume?
Yeah, so there is tomorrow, Governor Ferguson, he has sort of a ferry transition task force that mm-hmm. he is working with. Of course, he campaigned very heavily, right, on ferries. I'm going to head up to Mukilteo tomorrow, but he's doing a press conference with that transition committee, and then they're going to do a ferry ride, and then they're going to do a community town hall in Clinton. We will see what Ferguson does, but it will be fantastic to have Senator Wynn. Of course, the Department of Commerce does quite a bit. So to have Senator Wynn, working closely with the governor, I think is very advantageous to us. And of course, we're also still waiting for the announcement of who's going to head the Department of Transportation.
Right.
And there's some scuttlebutt around about that, about who that might be, but and whether, Governor Ferguson will make good on his sort of policy proposal to move the Washington State Ferry person directly into a cabinet position, right? Whether or not that remains I assume it will remain under the DOT, under WashTOT. But there's so much moving around. And, this is the appointments, the absentee appointments are one of the places where it's so interesting that the party politics really gets involved, because there's, sort of this mythos around how much power the Democratic Party has and, our activists. And, at the level, these precinct level and LD levels, the party itself, isn't always so much of a powerhouse, but in these appointment times, I remember in Colorado, we had someone, I was really active in the Democratic Party in 2016 through 2020, and we had an appointment, and there was basically that LD, our Dems were able to appoint that directly. We weren't subject to oversight. We basically got together and said, here's our candidate. So.
Wow. Well, I just think this is going to be a pretty exciting session this year, and it's going to be interesting for Vashon in particular, because of the ferry system.
Yeah. Reason to hope, reason to work hard.
Yes. There you go.
So you mentioned Transportation Committee chairs, and I haven't been paying attention. Representative Fye in Tacoma has been head of the House Transportation Committee. I assume that's still the case. Is that right? Mm-hmm. But the Senate, sounds like there must be a change there.
I understand. Well, I mean, Senator Leas is moving forward right now, but there is some curiosity about who will become the new Secretary of Transportation.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Under Ferguson, because Roger Miller stepped down, and so Ferguson's going to make that appointment. So speculation as to who it might be, and if we indeed will continue to have Senator Leas in the Senate.
And I don't know if you have any commentary about, you know, Senator Hobbs, who at one time was chair of the Senate Transportation Committee. I don't know if you were following transportation issues at that time.
Mm-mm.
Okay, well, he now is, of course, our Secretary of State, and there was a move there, which I think he was happy to do. He's obviously got, you know, the credentials to do that job. You know, there are a number of transportation issues beyond ferries, you know, that are really important to Washington State. And one of those tends to be, you know, where do you invest funds, like from the Climate Commitment Act? And do you invest those? Several people, of course, want to invest those in places that will reduce the impacts of the climate crisis.
Sure.
And other people would love to spend that on building more highways, which some people say, you know, that's maybe not really the priority for spending climate funds. So there's always seems this dynamic tension.
But what's the bridge situation in Washington State? I mean, I know that throughout the nation, you know, bridges are a huge, huge issue. Do we have the same here?
Seems like we have funding to now replace the I-5 bridge over Columbia River.
I think it's three quarters committed.
All right.
Yeah, and there's a great article in The Urbanist about the budget and about the transportation budget this year. And, you know, there's places over the Columbia River that you can look down and actually see the Columbia River through that bridge.
Through the bridge, yeah.
Right.
So, it's good for fishing.
Yeah. So, you know, that tension between where do you invest, and then also, you know, the push has been towards expansions of highways and transportation infrastructure versus maintenance. Mm-hmm. And we're getting to that pain point.
Well, and then public transportation investments is another player. Yeah. But I don't know the status of bridges in Washington. I assume that we have our challenges there. But
they just had one collapse in Oregon, I just saw, where a minor bridge that's there that I thought was kind of interesting. Okay, well, that's some interesting information, folks. I appreciate that.
Stay tuned.
Yeah. It could be exciting. I can see a few more topics coming up on the Brown Briefly this year.
A few guests we need to have.
A few guests, indeed. I'm thinking about that as we speak. Okay, so let's go to the national news. I mean, I hate to bring everybody down, but
something cheery at the end of the show, right?
Yeah, well, I'm hoping. Yeah, I've got Trudeau's resignation at the end of the show, so that ought to be fun. So, you know, this is totally, totally off the beaten path here, but pleaded versus pled. I keep looking at the 1,100 or so defendants from the January 6th. Yeah, 1,186 defendants have been charged with the January 6th thing.
Insurrection.
The insurrection. And I've been reading pleaded. They pleaded guilty. And geez, I've always said pled.
Pled is the common parlance. Pleaded is proper.
Yeah. Well, that was my question for you, Craig.
Can I go home now?
Legal beagle.
Yeah. I go back to sleep?
True. No. You've been improper your whole life.
Right? I have been. I have been, totally. I've always said pled. It's a heck of a lot easier to think bleeded, you know. Okay, so anyway, what do you think about this blanket pardon and all of this? Do you think this is going to happen? Do you think you'll go that crazy?
I think that his going crazy is a fact accomplished. You know, is he going to go crazy? It's too late.
Yeah, true.
He was in his press conference this morning that lasted an hour and almost a half down in Mar-a-Lago. He kind of backed off a little bit. He goes, "Well, we're looking at that, and you know, and really the only person who got killed in all of this was the woman, and she was, you know, a really nice person, and she wasn't doing anything." And I mean, it was unhinged. He's capable of anything, but I can't imagine that he would pardon everybody for all the various crimes that have been committed.
Well, especially those folks who have pled guilty.
Well, a lot of times people plead guilty in order to make a deal and shorten their incarceration.
True.
People have been given pardons who have pleaded guilty. What it does is it turns the whole pardoning thing on its head. I mean, the process used to be very orderly. No. Review of files, you know, is there some good reason to pardon the individual, and to make a mass pardon of all the individuals that made an assault on the Capitol building? Verges on insane.
Yeah, I just can't even imagine. Kevin?
So there was an interesting debate that I caught on CNN, I think it was last night, where, you know, they have the different people who are, you know, Republican representatives and, you know, Democrat representatives, and they brought up this question. And apparently the New York Times had quite an interesting article about all the people who are currently serving time, mm-hmm. and the fact that, you know, a number of these folks have previous convictions,
right?
That are, they're like, it's not the kind of person you'd want to like rent your back bedroom to,
yeah.
okay, kind of thing. Yeah. But you know, and they were playing, of course, the videos from the attack on the Capitol, and the one fellow there who's representing the Republicans was like, well, you know, you're seeing that video, that's where the violence was, but the other part of the campus was not, you know, no violence. And they had this big argument about that. And it finally got down to this thing of, well, what about pardoning? Well, all of those people you see on that video you're playing, yeah, they should stay in jail. And so, okay, so the bit is set by somebody who is apparently from Trump's former campaign advisor kind of person. So, you know, we'll see what he actually decides to do. But I thought that was a marker that was interesting
that person
set down.
It, you know, one of my folks, one of my conservative folks that I talk to all the time, or he was saying, oh, gosh, you know, that wasn't that big a deal. It was pretty peaceful. And I'm thinking, what planet are you on?
Were you not alive that day?
Exactly.
You know, I mean, who does not remember just watching? And I almost felt like I was in a stupor.
Yeah.
Just sort of like, is
this really happening?
What? Like,
yeah.
What? And of course, you know, let us all imagine that it weren't white men doing this.
Right.
Like, just imagine first. Just recast those videos with, you know, any people of color or women or, you know, anything, obviously we would be in such a different place. It's, you know, our conversations, once again, here we are in absurdist lands. These conversations feel absurd.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
And let me jump in on this.
Sure.
I mean, that's the importance of historians, if I can toot our historians' horns.
Sure.
You know, revisionist histories happen all the time, you know, and I mean, you look at any time and period when there's been a change in social structure, and it's attempt to retell the story.
Right.
But ultimately, the story will out, if you will. And that's where the Heather Cox Richardsons of the world, you know, an eminent historian in my mind, you know, she tells the truth, she tells the story, and she keeps the record. And so, yeah, I mean, you'll get this revisionist account. Well, it was just a group of patriots, you know.
Yeah.
You know, they were patriot with their view of what the United States is, but that's not the view of many others. And so it'll be interesting to see how that revisionist history may dominate for a year or 2 years or even 5 years. But ultimately, you know, history will reassert itself.
Mm-hmm.
And I firmly believe that, you know, what we saw on January 6th was indeed an insurrection, and we'll go down in history as that.
No question about it.
So I have a question, follow-up maybe, Bruce, on that. So the historians will rate presidents, right, after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember if Trump is now at the bottom of that list. The last I checked, he was, like, tied with his second lowest-ranked person.
That's right.
But do you think he has a chance at redemption with his second term? Or is the notion that, you know, you attacked the Capitol on your first term to extend your first term is like, no, the die is cast. No matter what he does now, he's down for the count. Any opinion?
I mean, it's hard to predict the future, but, you know, I mean, not everything that Trump and MAGA Republicans propose is, you know, pure evil either.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and so it really depends on how it will play out and how the opposition will play it. I'm an ultimate optimist, so I think, you know, we won't see ourselves devolving into a civil war, although that's certainly a possibility. But I see some elements coming out of this that potentially will help build the future after Trump is gone. And that's really the question. You know, can this very strong sort of anti-authoritarian, anti-establishment kind of mindset that's taken over America, can it sustain itself? And how will the establishment, how will the authoritarians in the society respond to that? And where will we be in 4 years and 8 years? That's really the question to me.
Yeah. Well, as you commented, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself, and I'm going, I don't think so. So let's talk about breaking news here about Eileen Cannon. Greg, you were watching the news this morning. What have you got to say about
that? That's a little complex, actually. Eileen Cannon, the judge who was presiding over the documents case down in Florida, ruled that that the Justice Department could not release Jack Smith's report about that case. And so she enjoined the Justice Department from releasing releasing that report. And in the process also included the D.C. insurrection case and said that he couldn't release it in that case either.
And how the heck does she have any authority to do that?
I don't think she has jurisdiction.
Well, I didn't think
but
so.
But you can't disregard a federal judge's order.
And I think I was, based on what I was hearing over the course of the last, 18 hours since this came out, I thought, well, of course Judge Cannon's going to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's par for the course.
It is par for the course.
So what's the next step?
I mean, well, the next step is how quickly can they resolve this issue? And it's possible that it could be resolved quite quickly. We'll see, because if it isn't resolved prior to
inauguration,
inauguration, then the attorneys that representing Trump in all of these proceedings will be the head of the Justice Department.
I know.
And then they will just let those cases go away.
That just...
And they'll let those cases be dropped.
So I understand the 11th Court of Appeals has to now take action. And depending on the timeline, it may go beyond them to the Supreme Court.
It's possible. It is possible. He has played the justice system like a violin.
There's
also the issue of the sentencing that's scheduled for Friday in the New York state case. I didn't hear how the judge there was supposed to rule right around now as to whether or not he was going to delay.
No, he said he'd proceed. They rejected the
last
the
I heard,
request.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Good.
Yeah, maybe that's the one, actually, that might lead to the Supreme Court. I may be confused about that.
Well, I think you're right. The only way that the... that Trump's and his attorneys are going to be able to stop the sentencing is if they can get a judge to alter the status quo, which is to proceed with the sentencing.
Sure.
So they have to get a judge to agree.
Yes.
Okay. And there aren't a lot of judges that are quite as sympathetic as Judge Cannon is to the arguments made by our once and future president.
But is any of this really relevant in the sense that, you know, no matter, he's already stated, right, that there will be no jail time associated with so to me, these arguments about Trump and justice have been sort of angels on the head of the pin since they all rolled out, because, you know, living as the person that I do, I've understood that, you know, white men of that money and power will be able to do whatever they want to do. You know, my shocked face that our listeners cannot see remains very placid, right, about all of this. And, you know, it's sort of, I think a lot of folks find, you know, only our sparest hopes in the comforts of the past, and that we just endure sort of these times and, you know, these folks who have always always done exactly what they're going to do, will continue to always do exactly what they're going to do. And, you know, we will just sort of endure.
I understand. And I see your face with that fabulous haircut that's on top of it that you have. And as disheartened as I am over the way the justice system has worked throughout this proceeding, I'm not quite as cynical on this subject as you are, Amy. There's many of us who would love to see Judge
Marchand,
right, in
New York,
address the future president of the United States and lay out what it was that the jury and had found and the evidence found, so that people, and that's something everybody would watch. Mm-hmm. His supporters would watch that. Mm-hmm. Because they'd want him to strike back and, you know, that sort of thing. But there might be some little satisfaction in having that happen. So I'd like to see it.
I think it's important. I mean, I agree that, you know, in historical context, and whether those reports are how long they're buried, you know, just the fact that they are extant, right, that they happened was so critical. They probably, things like that won't be happening over the next 4 years. So now we take these artifacts of justice, right, and sort of try to carry them forward.
Mm-hmm. Well, it isn't the main point of this, the fact that if with the sentencing, he is confirmed that he is a felon, period. And without that, there's still some...
No, he is a felon.
He is a felon.
It's a done deal.
Doesn't this sentencing kind of put a cap on it? I mean...
Well, it does, but it's still, you know...
Still going to carry, right?
See, the thing is that with the sentencing, there's a few things he hasn't been able to appeal until the sentencing.
Oh, okay.
Right. See, all of his appeals up till now have been...
procedural.
Well, they're in between. They're interstitial. They've been made before the final.
Right.
And those are kind of, you're not permitted to do that very often. Mm-hmm. But as Amy points out, privileged, wealthy, exactly. But if the sentencing is done, then he can appeal these. I don't think he has much chance, even to the Supreme Court, but I have been wrong.
Well, one thing I'd like to go back to is, Amy, your comment, because what I'm hearing is been there, done that, kind mm-hmm. of, right? And I hear that same thing from my friends at Black Pack, for example. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. it's like, yeah, I think that from my perspective, it's an exhibition of the strength that people need to have when over the decades and centuries, right, they have not been given the equity, right, that is really, in my opinion, deserved. Mm-hmm. And I take strength from that. And it's sorrowful strength, right, that we have to be that way. But if we're not that way, the alternative is to, like, give up. And so, you know, that's not in the equation set, at least for me. And I hope it's not in the equation set for too many others.
Well,
we've seen this before, and we're hopefully maybe not going to see it as frequently in the future. But, you know, it's part of the heritage, unfortunately.
So this gets to my ultimate question here, and that is, what is we as local citizens can do? What part can we play in overturning some of this stuff, or not really overturning, but doing our part to, you know, what can we do? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, Bruce, you're a historian. What have people done in the past that have, you know,
people resist.
But how? I mean,
I mean, all kinds of ways. I mean, go back to the introduction of Jim Crow laws led to the creation of the NAACP. Mm-hmm. You know, the Brown versus the Board of Education led to the Civil Rights Movement. Mm-hmm. I think this will lead to increased sort of resistance among progressives and liberals and moderates to say, wait a minute, this is not the country that we want. Not that will be easy, and not that it will necessarily slow things down significantly, but ultimately they'll be victorious. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, that's you can't say that there's always a sort of a move toward equity and freedom in the world, or even in the United States. But when you take the broad picture, we've come a long way in 200 years.
Well, yeah.
And the economic piece of it too is also, just as sort of, folks who are already marginalized, disadvantaged, or, targeted, right? That's the new sort of, we're now being asked to question words like disadvantaged, instead say targeted, right? Folks who have been targeted for, socioeconomic disadvantage. But it's really interesting. It's been interesting to watch this MAGA billionaires versus MAGA nationalists, MAGA Christian nationalists, right? That little internecine kind of deal. And, that's where I almost take great heart there, that they will rip themselves apart, when you watch the speaker battle. And, hopefully they stay real busy fighting themselves. And, onward we go at the local level, at the state level, in, continuing to advance, healthy economic policies and healthy social justice policies. And, because those economics are tied right in. What he's proposing economically could be singularly disastrous as well.
Yeah, I'm reading about the stock market that we're approaching a bubble. It's going to have a big correction in 2025. Well,
it doesn't make any difference if people are willing to look the other way.
Yeah.
Who really support Trump.
Mm-hmm.
They have gotten so used to the abnormal.
Right.
That has been normalized and rationalized that... I think that they could be subjected to tremendous pain and still be supportive if they can rationalize it some way. It's our man is being, victimized, and it's really the Democrats who are responsible for this. That's why I kind of take a three-pronged approach. Mm-hmm. One is the one that Bruce mentioned about protesting and other means of responding. The ACLU has been gearing up for this for 4 years.
Right.
They have teams of lawyers all over the United States to deal with various issues from the environment to homelessness to immigration, et cetera, et cetera. There's other organizations. There's Lawyers for Democracy. That have all come together and are preparing to take these matters to court, where they belong, for the most part, at least as you'd like to see the courts respond with a little
like
more due haste.
Yeah.
But that's one of the things. The other thing is that I see people dropping out. I see people on the left, mm-hmm. a lot of them mm-hmm. dropping out. They're tired.
Yeah.
Just tired.
Well, look at the viewership from MSNBC.
Yeah.
It's dropped like 40%.
Yeah. And I suggest if you can do it, don't drop out. You've got to pay attention.
Right.
Because this has become so normalized. Again, the speech that he made, not the speech, but the press conference that he made this morning out of Mar-a-Lago just shook me. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was the mind unhinged, the things that he talked about. So you've got to stay engaged.
Yeah.
Personally, on a personal level, and this is something that Bruce has talked about, and I think we'll have an article in the Beachcomber to a certain degree coming up this week, is talk to conservatives, but don't talk about Trump. Separate that conversation. Because the moment you say, how can you put up with that idiot, that child, that spoiled brat,
stops.
You it's done. Yeah. It's absolutely done. The conversation's done. Talk to them about what it is they want for the country. What it is do they want is their final goal or their interest, and see how much shared interest you can have. And third, let me just finish real quick.
Please, please.
The third thing is support candidates that not only believe what you believe, but you think can win because they're authentic. One of the reasons why Trump won is his supporters consider him authentic.
Yeah.
They're not it's not the kind of authenticity I want, but he's authentic.
Yeah.
He's one of them.
We
don't have to put up with wokeness, and we don't have to put up with gay lesbian rights, and we don't have to, the stuff that I remember from back in the 50s, 60s, 70s, whatever the case may be. Get candidates who are genuinely authentic and can connect with a common man and woman.
You know, though, I mean, I completely agree, Craig. One of the things that I said to one of my friends said, "Oh, my wife hates that guy, but she has to vote for him." And what I wrote back to him was, "Does she really think that we should pull out of NATO? Does she really think that we should listen to Putin rather than our own intelligence organization? Does she really?" I mean, I asked him those questions about, hey, these are the things. We're not talking about the man. We're talking about these things that are important. And you know what he wrote back? Blah, blah, blah. Mm. Like, interesting. It's all about the man.
All those unimportant factors you just brought up.
Isn't that, I mean, it blows me away.
I'm sorry you were dismissed in that way.
Yeah. It's just crazy.
Well, I will say that I see that people are not stepping back. Not everybody's fully engaged, and stepping back for a while is something that can be healthy, and mental health is part of the game. Yeah. But there's like five indivisible groups across the state of Washington that have now re-energized. There are seven brand new indivisible groups in the state of Washington that have come forward in response to this last election. Our local immigrant refugee rights working group was something around five or six people around the table at the last meeting. We're about 25.
Wow.
So, in other words, people are moving forward. Personally, I was involved with what we called the WIN Elections Group, which is Washington Indivisible Network. We know the elections that are important. I can tell you right now, the governor's races, the Cook Political Report has already identified the two competitive governor's races in 2025. There's going to be Virginia in 2025 as well, their state house. We know at the U.S. House, there's something along the order of 35 to 40 competitive seats. About two-thirds of those have incumbents that are Democrats that we can support right now. We know where they are. We know the groups that are in those neighborhoods, right? We can find out which groups are active on the ground in those communities, not in Washington State. And we also in Southwest Washington had a pretty amazing shift in terms of support for Democratic candidates in Southwest Washington. So how do we connect with, how do we strengthen, support those communities to build their advocacy and their power so that those individuals are more likely to be in office that represent the values that we're talking about here. If you know how to reach me, if you don't, kevin@indivisiblevashon.org, or go to the website Indivisible Vashon and get involved. All of those opportunities people here on the island and off the island can participate in. So I'm frustrated, but I'm hopeful that we can continue to make progress. I'm not saying it's going to be an easy road ahead, but I think that we need to keep seeing there's a light at the end of the tunnel, and hope we can create that light.
Well, that is the positive note that we needed to end on.
We can only hope that light at the end of the tunnel is not the railroad train coming
over. Yes, I
agree. There is a light at the end of the
tunnel. That helps you faith somewhere along the line.
Right. And if all else fails, there's always that neon light at the end of the tunnel just down the road at Sporty's.
Yeah. Well, thank you, folks, for your beautiful insights. I mean, you guys are where it's at. I mean, I think that Brian Brown would be really proud of this group and the intelligent conversation that's coming out of this. And I personally really appreciate it. I always feel like the dummy on the board here, but I get to run the board.
You hosted a wonderful conversation.
Yes, well, thank absolutely. You. Thank you.
It's been a pleasure.
So, Amy, next week, huh?
Yeah, next week, a surprise guest. I do have an invite out that I am waiting on, so we may be surprise guests, but I would love to preview the Brian Brown retrospective that's coming up and give over some time to that.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. So it's a couple of weeks away, I think, right? Mm-hmm. I don't have my calendar
21st,
in front of me,
I think
but it's the five-year and three-day anniversary of the passing of our mentor and lead, Brian Brown. And so maybe all of the known former Briefleys, you're never a former Briefly, right? You're always a Briefly.
It's kind of like being a Marine, you know?
Yeah. So far, it looks like we're going to have a very full house, and including Sheila Brown. who plans to join us. And so I really look forward to being able to look back at our fond memories of Brian Brown, who we recognize every week here.
That is awesome. I am very, very much looking forward to that. So, okay, folks, so for Bruce, Kevin, Craig, Amy, I'm Truman. We really appreciate you tuning in and look forward to listening again next week. See you all then.